This is part two of our interview with the guys from Freestyle Love Supreme. You might want to go back and give part one a listen or not. However you're doing it right. Enjoy the show.
The SparkFile podcast may contain profanity and other adult content. Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my
Streaming even.
And with an audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I believe that introvert-extrovert does the same injustice as woman-man does. It's not binary. There's so much gray area inside of that spectrum. You know, I think that there's a quadrant at least, but then there's also all of these sliding scales inside of these quadrants. It's like, I never wanted to be on stage when I was a kid. Like, I said, and my mother still quotes this to me to this day. She brought all of us, I have four older brothers, she brought us all to the Bucks County Playhouse in New Hope, Pennsylvania. And she said, "You're going to try out for Jesus Christ Superstar." And I said, "I will never get on a stage."
Yep. I want to go back and catch, you mentioned something about classes, and now just hearing you talk, I'm like, sign me up. What are these classes you're talking about? Is it anything? Who are, Susan, you didn't even email me to tell me who we're talking to. So, but really, does it have anything to do with these exercises you're talking about or the neural pathways? Like, tell us about these classes.
Yeah, hugely. So I'm lucky enough to have two improv companies. One of them here in New York is called Freestyle Love Supreme Academy. And for us, that's a little bit more about a community experience and a little bit more about creating the environment in which people will feel free to fail. And that's something that we've worked really hard at creating the infrastructure and group check-ins and checkouts so that there's a certain amount of psychological safety that gets created very quickly inside of these classes, meaning I'm willing to take a risk in front of strangers. And then there's another organization that I started called Speechless, which is out in San Francisco. It's in the Bay Area, but we're growing and expanding. And we've just opened studios. So for about 6 years, we've been doing these workshops inside of very big companies. So we're embedded at Google and at Adobe and at Salesforce. And we are there every like week. And we do workshops with people and we do big giant corporate workshops. But now we're doing these studio classes where you can drop into our studio and do something called restorative play. It's mental fitness. So we're trying to expand this concept of how we stay healthy. Neuroplasticity being a very big, important part of what a healthy brain is able to continue to do.
Wow.
What does that mean?
So learning to learn. Neuroplasticity is your ability to continue to learn new ways of learning. And the human brain, for a long time, it was thought that that actually had a window of time that that ceased to sort of grow and between 18 and 24. For a long time, scientists thought, that's it. Well, once you hit like 18, between 18 and 24, your ability to learn new ways of learning, you're everything's set, right? So your synaptic
You can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Unless you continue to break pattern. And so restorative play starts to add in a bunch of new adaptogenic skill sets to your brain by doing in the moment play with people in that studio with you and also online. So we're going to try to scale this out. So I don't know if people heard of Mirror, but there's this wonderful exercise mirror now that people can have in their homes and interact with a trainer. We'd like to do the same thing for your brain with improv as that sort of adaptogenic tool.
Wow.
Your vocabulary is good.
Susan's way back there. I think we left Susan back about 5 minutes ago. Yeah, restorative play. I'm into it.
And that's just one of them. Yeah, there's other classes as well.
All right, we get it. You have more words.
No. I'll slow down.
Say a few words.
Bridging the gap, right? So there's a big confidence gap, especially in the tech community, that it's right now about 75-25. It's some people say 70-30, but there's so many more bros in programming and in tech than there are women. And it's a huge field of opportunity in the future around how the world is going to work. There's going to be a lot more coding that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And so how do we create an environment where people feel very confident and also playful and authentically themselves while they're maybe going into that field? Because that field's huge, and it's not just about programming. It's about all the support that goes around that as well. And it'll still take a human-centered communication to do it. It's not just that it's going from a machine to a machine.
It's not typically a field where you think, make some mistakes. Play around a bit.
That's right.
Yeah.
You have to know what you're talking about. There's this sense of like, I've got to be super confident. And so there's a huge confidence gap that happens especially in our country, around the way women are raised and the way men are raised. So on the playground, oh, he's just a boy. And on the playground, you should know better, you're a girl. And so that style in our schools and prevalent in most of our societies as well, really, really hammers home the safety is super important for women, and reckless abandon is super important for mm-hmm. boys. And that mm-hmm. leads to a big confidence gap. And so what we're trying to do is undo some of that deep neural networking that has happened in our society and find new ways of breaking apart that specific preferred pathway so that it dissolves and you create new ones that are more helpful and useful for yourself.
Oh, that's right. We were going to pull that string. Yeah.
Oh, so it would be useful if we get some words, because we shouldn't know what we're about to say. So maybe, do you want to ask for words from the audience?
Yeah, give us a word.
Recreation, harness, pineapple, graffiti. Great. Okay, here we go. Yeah. Okay. Looking for another place in the nation where I can relax with some recreation. I guess I found it. I guess I have to dapple while I eat this another slice of pineapple. Okay. Just check me out, because I'm about to shout to the rooftops where I did graffiti with PD. Yeah, conclusions are needy, but maybe not so great. And I have to harness the power like I was the Hulk. Or maybe Thor, yes, the big old bulk. All right, I hope that I have to walk through the park, because soon right now we're going to be on the Spark Files.
Oh my God.
Great. So we memorized that right before.
Yeah.
We wrote that. Thank you to our plants.
Holy crap. He'd be like, as long as someone's wearing a blue shirt tonight, I've got this thing I can say to blue shirt. Right on it.
Could you please share with us a little bit about your origin story? You little superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Once upon a time. I was a very adventurous kid who had lots of diverse interests. And in high school, I ranged from participating in the yearbook club to the debate club to all of the bands, orchestra, wind ensemble, and jazz. And I was secretary of my class. And that same sort of macrocosm in the micro version within the bands and the music parts, I didn't know what I really wanted to play. So I started with piano and I stopped because my piano teacher's house smelled like cats. And then I picked up a saxophone, played that for a while. And then I think it was around Bill Clinton and it felt like overplayed. So I stopped with that. And then I picked up a trumpet because there was one in my attic. I can do two things at once. my stepfather had one, so I started playing trumpet, and I didn't like it anymore, so I stuck with percussion. And percussion gave me the ability to be eclectic and have diverse interests within the same world, you know. So that kind of way is how it's shifted into my, like, my more professional life, because when I went to college, I was still doing music and still doing percussion, and then I got involved with at UMass. And then
Mission Improvable.
And in Mission Improvable was the name of our improv group. And I was right, like, why do all improv groups and like a cappella groups are like
totally there.
Pun masters.
The name Shockwave was bestowed upon me because we had some games that we'd play. One was called Death in 30 Seconds, where one improviser would be on stage and they were given a normal household activity. And then another improviser was off stage with a microphone and they had to provide the sound effects for that person to die in 30 seconds. So, you know, it could, you know, making pancakes, and it would be
it always ends with death for you.
That's it.
Oh my gosh. Not only just for you, but I shouldn't say this out loud, but I will.
Now we need
there is
know.
Infanticide in almost every one of our shows. Shockwave somehow finds a way to kill a baby.
An imaginary baby.
Don't do it.
Chris, can I ask about your parents? Through all of this, I want to try this, I want to try that. Like, were they just like, great, son, go at it. Yeah. What do you love?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I was more or less raised by a single parent, by my mom.
Mom Wave,
as we affectionately call her. And she just was overflowing with love and acceptance and, you know, it to a point where it was hard growing up sometimes, you know, like, come on, mom, just, you know, give me some discipline, you know? So I didn't really have that figure in my life. So I was the kid just playing in the woods. I would go to the library and play in the books. Not literally, you know, and, so I could just change my mind at will, and she was just okay with it. So that's wonderful. With
worked
that,
out.
I, yeah, it worked yeah. out. You know, we all find our ways to work out. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
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 I don't get it. No, I'm kidding. I got it. I love you. Could they be one and the same?
May I start with batshit crazy?
Don't take mine. You're going to take mine?
Oh, I'm taking it.
Oh.
So this is 2005, and we had just gotten done a run at Ars Nova. It was our first, like, actually produced run. Everything before that kind of had happened at improv theaters, where runs don't happen, just occasional happenings happen. And so a couple people came and saw the show, and they're like, wow, this could probably do really, really well at the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland. And we all were, at the time, able to do it. So we said, God, that sounds pretty cool. Yeah. Lynn was still working on In the Heights. It just fell kind of right in the perfect timing. And so we went over to Edinburgh and we were performing at the Assembly Rooms, which is an amazing, amazing venue. I mean, we landed in the catcher's mitt of safety in Edinburgh right away. It's not a mocking. It's just a terrible analogy. So jumping up, I mean, because the catcher's mitt, it's a ball that gets thrown in at high velocity, and then he's got to throw it. Nothing rests. Okay, sure, it's fine.
You know what I think that came from?
What's that?
You know those novelty chairs that look like...
Oh, yes. Yes.
And you park yourself there?
Nope. Great. So we land on the catcher's mitt of safety at the Assembly Rooms, and we have great audiences, but we need to busk and we need to go out. And not only are we doing, you know, we did 36 shows in 25 days. We also did appearances. We would do like Best of Fest and all this kind of stuff. And so one night, and Shockwave, this human next to me, who is a tall drink of water with crystal blue eyes that you could just dive into.
Mm-hmm.
I think of it as the warm lagoon of amniotic fluid. That's the safety net of my mother's belly.
All right,
belly.
Tell a story.
Sorry. Sometimes you have to give color to the advancement as well, Shock. I was stuck in color mode. Okay, great. And so Shockwave would often go out and look for opportunities for us to do the thing that we do. And there's all these best of the fests that happen at each different venue. So each different venue kind of puts on their, hey, check out this new act. It's amazing. Or check out this new act. It's amazing. Right, Scottish. So oh, I see what's happening now.
Oh, yep. Boomerang.
I like to put it in the cricket match. Great. So it's the cricket mitt of safety. Sorry, Susan. So there we are, about to go to this best of the fest that Shockwave sets up that starts at 1 a.m. Of course, it's the Fringe. Uh-huh, things happen at all times. And it's at the Gilded Balloon, which is kind of a notorious venue of like, oh yeah, the seedy shows happen at the Gilded Balloon. It's funny, but it's always off the handle and people are like crazy. So we have the enviable spot of about 3 a.m. And we're waiting there because we might go on at 2, but we might go on at 3. And Shock's like, no, just stick it out. Just stick it out. And we're all exhausted. We had done 2 shows earlier and been on a radio program with Fred McCauley. And then Shock's like, just stick it out. Just stick it out. And we see in the rafters that there's like 2 levels of seating, but everyone's just standing up. It's one of those kind of mosh pit shows. There are people dressed in costume in the mezzanine for reasons we don't know. And there are, I'd want to say maybe 12 to 13 chavs. That's a British euphemism for really low class white people. And so there are these chavs dressed up in like Wimbledon gear and they've got tennis balls and they're just sitting up there. And we're like, this is a strange thing. So we finally get the call at like 2:45 to get on stage. And there we go. Lin-Manuel Miranda, myself, Chris Jackson, Bill Sherman and you, I think Arthur was smart and did not come. And Shock's like, all right, this is it. This is our Gilded Balloon chance.
I'm being mischaracterized in this story.
No, you're not. This is exactly what happened. You can ask anyone else other than Shockwave. And we get out on that stage and we start doing our thing, which is, you know, freestyle rapping. And for some reason, the rowdy chavs up in the mezzanine are like, let's throw these tennis balls at these performers. And they start throwing tennis balls at us as we're performing. And I get hit in my testicles.
Oh.
Very hard. And I say, we're done. The show is over. Let's get out of here. I was just lacquered in the tokies, which is not a phrase that anyone has ever said before.
But we'll say it now.
And now we say it multiple times.
Yeah, it is now shorthand for when something goes terribly awry. So that is my favorite, gone awry, batshit crazy. I was
awesome.
Lacquered in the tokies, and now it's a sort of freestyle euphemism thereafter.
Why don't I polish it off with a good story?
That was a good story.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a little bit of both. And I've given that many times in like the press for the Broadway run, just because it's so memorable. And it speaks to, you know, it was a negative experience, but also speaks to like the longevity of our group and the things we've gone through together.
Yeah,
the
and risk. What I love about it is that everyone rallied, though. Like, Chris Jackson got in front of me. Bill Sherman picked me up. It felt like we were like in enemy territory. Yeah. Everyone carried me out and they were all like, let's go
Wait,
find those chavs.
Doubled over and
oh,
like
yeah,
on
I was
the floor?
On the ground. Yeah,
oh,
I was hit so incredibly hard. And
drama.
Yeah, it was drama. And they carried me out. Like, yeah, it totally. It was definitely
when
one of the
When we say creative
moments.
Risk, this is what we mean.
We mean risk to your vast deference.
So, kids, hey, wear a cup. Yeah. So another festival that we were very privileged to be a part of and lucky, and I don't believe even exists anymore, but was the Aspen Comedy Festival.
Oh. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. It was a wonderful experience that we were given also around the same time where we already had our run at Ars Nova and we got our big Hollywood agents. Oh, did we get them before or after?
After. Yeah, but like right during. Yeah. This was February of 2005.
So the Aspen Comedy Festival was a place where comedy acts were essentially shopped around or
discovered.
Yeah. Like put on pedestals. And it was like a week long.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we performed after Flight of the Conchords before they had their TV show. We shared the dressing room which was all outside in a tent, breathing from oxygen tanks because we're so high up in the air, before we went on stage.
Oh, wow.
And we were asked to perform one of our bits from our show that we generally close out the show with, called Day in the Life, where we bring an audience member on stage and interview them about their day. And it inevitably, well, I won't give any spoilers, but it's a great way to end our show.
Yeah.
So we...
Kill him, maybe.
Yeah, well, always. Ooh, twins!
At least one of them survives. I must be Romulus.
Yeah. Cain killed Abel.
I was doing Romulus and Remus, and you went Cain and Abel. Damn it.
We were raised differently.
Sure we were.
So,
my parents had very strict rules.
The person that we were invited to perform the day in the life was Catherine O'Hara.
What?
So that was a really amazing time.
Lovely fruit wine.
Yeah, being on stage. That was a privilege for us. And when we performed it, there's just a couple offshoots of the story, which which may blemish the perfect apple I've just presented. But
no apple is perfect.
So when I remember, for me, you always should check your equipment if you're using somebody else's equipment before you're using it in a performance or our practice experience, because we were rehearsing this with Catherine, and we're all sort of starstruck, and also, what are we doing here? And also, where's the oxygen? So the microphone that I had to use, I think we were performing in a basement of some ski lodge or something. And
yep. St. Regis basement.
The microphone that I had been used before, and it was a rough mic, so that whenever I did something like, that's an inhale sound. So when I did that for the very first time, while we're performing with Catherine for the very first time, all these beard hairs all come into my mouth and into my lungs. So
at least it was Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah. So always check your equipment, and then you turn the apple over, and then a bruise on the back. Is that when we actually performed this live? It was at the end.
We went last.
It was another sort of best of the fest of Aspen, and we went last after a whole
Poundstone.
Bunch of acts. But then Paula Poundstone,
yep.
who really pounded the audience.
Oh, they all left. They yep. hated what she was doing.
Whoa.
So in it was like 300 people in the audience, and it probably trickled down to like 50.
And then
it was also very, very late, but we still went through with it and did it. So that experience is still there. There's probably a picture somewhere on MySpace. but it was a wonderful experience, but you know, showbiz.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have one that we use within Freestyle Love Supreme Academy. And it's a phrase that I've heard elsewhere in the improv world, but we've really instituted it because it rings true to what we help to facilitate. And it's the phrase, invest, don't invest.
Invent. Invest, don't invent.
Yeah. invest, don't invent. When we're teaching us...
Sorry, I threw you off. You had it, and I was trying to do the thing that you do for me all the time.
When you know your own stories, or when you know the story, you can more easily tell it. So if you're told to tell a story on the spot, it helps to have a spark of inspiration.
Oh, I see what you did there.
A suggestion of a word, a place to begin, to already have, to do what you already know,
mm-hmm.
rather than trying to reinvent something. Why write a book about a character that you've never met or experienced? Write a book about a character who you are.
Nice.
It just helps you, gives you some guideposts. Yeah.
I like it.
Who?
Ooh.
Keep showing up. Sure. There's going to be a lot of moments in your life that will try to prevent you from showing up. And your job as a creative human being is to keep showing up. That's right. Lacquered in the tokies.
Showing up.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a question we like to ask. What's it all for? What is it all for?
You got something, Chalk?
The first thing I think of is to not be in a cubicle. But I think it's a lot bigger than that. It's just the first thought that comes to mind. The way that our world is structured is one where it depends upon power structures that need to be in place, which arranges people into certain forced walls of action and predetermined outcome, and the growth of money and economy, and you know, like our world is going in a certain direction. And as artists, we have opportunity to swim upstream, to show people that that's not all there is, and to live our life with a little bit more happiness and freedom from within rather than without.
Word.
For me, it's to help myself and to help others become more fully human.
I like those answers.
I just gave out a big assignment to the Freestyle Love Supreme Academy teachers, which is to read Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed. And if you have read it, good on you. And if you haven't, get it. There's even free ones available. But for me, that really settled the score around how to help encourage a community in which everyone's viewpoint is valued and the wisdom of the room is much greater than whatever power structure is in place. And I think what Shock was talking about is very much what the realization of becoming more fully human is all about, which is having a deep connection to other human beings. And when you have those deep connections and you support each other, then you become more fully human and you help them become more fully human. And I think the world becomes a less polarized and much more unified, glowing star that we are.
Please repeat the question. You know, I just want to be truthful to the process right now. And we are in such a point of transition of what this group is going through and where we are. We close in a week or 2 weeks ago, if this came out.
We already closed.
We already closed.
Who even is this show?
Yeah. And we're developing the Freestyle Love Supreme Academy, which is a lot of, it's like doing two full-time jobs at once. And because this group is so, we have the rhythm and how to expand and how to grow it. There's a lot already on that plate. And right now I'm looking for that spark. I'm looking for something that is sort of separate and outside of what it is that we're doing so that I can reinvigorate and build upon the creativity that I've already developed. Yeah. I mean, I have to say that your hand's on my shoulder, like telling me to.
Sparking me right now.
Yeah, like I said, I don't really, you know, being referred to as a beatboxer is one thing. So I'm looking for to expand upon the maker, which is another thing.
I cannot wait to see what sparks you and what you do with it. Honestly. We love you both. Shockwave Sullivan.
Wow, thank you. Thank you.
We'll even take your feedback, but you know the price of admission. First, you have to share a creative risk you have taken recently.
Share it with people you hate.
If something tickles your fancy and gets your creative juices flowing, we're writing you a forever permission slip to make that thing that's been knocking at your door. It's your turn to take a spark and fan it into a flame. And take it and make.
could be something that I wanna make or how I wanna be. I pump it in my spark files. I jump into my spark files. Let's open up the spark files.
Hey, we want to thank our live hype man, Jack D'Amelio, and everyone at Mark Fisher Fitness, Mark Fisher, Michael Keeler, Andrew Cole, the amazing Denise Stumper, and special thanks to the attendees of the Spark File New Year 2020 Creativity Workshop and Live Podcast. You are truly a bonfire of sparks.